Hello, and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we're talking with Chanda Hinton, founder of the Chanda Center for Health in Denver. The center works to offer help for those with disabilities, including spinal cord injuries and brain injuries. Chanda suffered a spinal cord injury when she was very young, and she's made it her life's mission to help others. She talks about her journey, her center, and how the healthcare industry can offer better care for those with disabilities. Well, thanks for joining us today. We are talking today with Chanda Hinton, an advocate for individuals with disabilities and the founder of the Chanda Center for Health in Denver. The center works to improve care and outcomes for individuals with disabilities, such as spinal cord injuries and brain injuries and other injuries as well. Chanda, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to have a meaningful conversation about healthcare and how that affects people with disabilities.
Could we talk a little bit just about your center and some of the work you're doing to help individuals get better care?
Absolutely. The Chanda Center for Health is a place for our population, for individuals with physical disabilities. And you had mentioned spinal cord and brain injury. We also have other neurological disabilities like CP, spina bifida. And it's a place where it's this level of true integration and disability competent care is able to intersect. And so individuals come to our center to get services all underneath one roof, which include acupuncture, massage, chiropractic, physical therapy, care coordination, behavioral health services. And some of those we deliver through our own providers, and some of those services are offered through our community partners. And it's just a way to really redefine healthcare and the way that we deliver it to individuals with long-term disabilities, and really having a recognition that we've got to redefine it in terms of how it feels. We have to be really mindful that it's proactive and preventative. And so it's a very simple but yet very complex way of ensuring that we're looking at healthcare in a way that's really essential and important for people with long-term disabilities.
Well, the center's obviously doing some very meaningful work. What was the tipping point where you realized you had to help develop the center like you're now operating?
Yeah, the tipping point was my own personal experience. I'm a woman with a spinal cord injury. I was injured when I was 9. I was accidentally shot in the back of the neck. And so from 9 until I was 21, living with paralysis and consuming a lot of medications to address those secondary conditions that came with your spinal cord injury was not sustainable, did not create this level of vitality within my energy, mind, body, spirit, all those pieces that are really a part of healthcare and oftentimes get separated, as we know. And so when I realized that I was having major chronic pain and yet another level of medication was introduced to me, I really had to figure out a way to reapproach my spinal cord injury, because I was at a place where I would use the medical model to quote unquote address the secondary conditions, but that overutilization and long-term use would then result me having to use medical intervention to save my life. So I was hospitalized because with my chronic pain, I got addicted to opioid use, not even really knowing that I did. And I got down to 59 pounds. So I was hospitalized. Feeding tube, I had a feeding tube put in and was being fed intravenously. And so when you use that medical model and then you come back to quote unquote like life, going back to what caused you to get there does not seem like the appropriate path, right? And so my sister and I and my mom had some deep discussions with my physician about, wait a second, we're not going to go into a vicious cycle, but rather how do we reinvent the way that we're approaching my spinal cord injury to be proactive and preventative and not go into supporting this vicious cycle.
It sounds like you went through a long process. Part of the process, it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, was just in terms of communicating with your doctor and your healthcare providers. Was that, how difficult was that in terms of explaining that this was not working for you, that you needed to try a different approach?
Yeah, I mean, I think that oftentimes our healthcare providers are often put into difficult situations where, yes, being the source of education to my physician, I was the first individual in which he ever served that had a spinal cord injury. Granted, I was in a rural community in Nebraska. Unfortunately, that reality has not shifted much since when I was, injured in 91. And so, navigating that component of it, as well as navigating, it wasn't really my responsibility to educate him. Rather, it was more of a systemic kind of issue that I get to see now that I'm 41 years old. I'm looking back at my experience and several other experiences for all persons with disabilities across the nation around this topic. And so for me, I think it puts them in a very difficult spot because it's not this core requirement within, when you go to MD school, and it's not a requirement of continued ed. And so there's that piece. And I think that it also puts, in terms of what's covered and coverage through various insurance companies, like I think often our physicians don't recommend active or proactive and preventative services, because as soon as they say, well, try acupuncture massage or go to the gym, like our insurance companies are not funding these pieces. And so it puts our physicians in a place where, well, I want to help you, but I'm limited to what I can recommend based on what is being covered in our country. And so those are a lot of barriers for our folks. And I would say just general population, but makes it a little bit more complex when you're working with somebody that has paralysis and needs to rely on other options to sustain wellness.
You touched on something interesting. We talked about doctors and training. Is that something that needs to be taken more seriously in terms of medical education, like training doctors in terms of caring for individuals with disabilities and thinking about their needs in terms of whole health?
Absolutely. And that's, one of our efforts is to ensure that we are addressing that particular problem from a systemic level, not just convincing physicians or the healthcare community, but rather putting into some really strong language within our, state and federal statute around what that really needs to be, how that needs to look and how it needs to be addressed and audited, and that there needs to be some compliance. And it's not in a way at all to have physicians ever feel attacked by that compliance, or the healthcare to be feeling as though they're attacked, but rather to say, there's got to be some compliance put into place in some capacity, and this is what it looks like. And in reality, we know that all of our healthcare at some capacity has really good intentions. It doesn't mean that intentions are always going to create the positive results and outcomes that we want, because in reality, if you think about those outcomes and those impacts, it's driven by much bigger systems that our physicians ever have control over. And so we have to say, yes, it's not so much about you, it's more about the bigger system. And we have statistics and we have research and papers that show that people with disabilities are a significant health disparity population. People die from lack of compliance within this community, and those things aren't okay. And the fact that we continue to think that they're okay, or not make changes as a message to show that it's still okay, is the problem. So yeah, it's a significant problem. And I think that, I'm excited to be a part of that movement, knowing that this has been a narrative and a conversation for the last quarter of a century. So I'm pretty motivated by changing something that needs to be changed.
You mentioned a couple of things, but maybe just to expand, what are some things on a systemic level that need to be done to change healthcare for individuals with disabilities?
I think that Well, one, the piece about the systemic lack of education and awareness, right? So we know that. I think that there's ensuring that we have funding for more proactive and preventative services. So one of our examples that our organization has done is we did some changes within Colorado Medicaid to make sure that Medicaid was funding acupuncture, massage, and chiropractic. And so when we look at ensuring that physicians are aware of how to serve disabilities and populations and having those clinics accessible, that's one piece of it. Another piece is ensuring that they have systemic ability to say, oh yeah, I want to recommend massage and acupuncture, with the ability that the funding for that is not going to be the barrier. And so I think that when you look at those two pieces, you start to really break down by being more cost effective with people's lives, improving the quality of their lives, not having this reoccurring hospitalization, ER visit. So you're looking at these two things that have a dramatic shift within how people are aware of healthcare for people with disabilities and the access in which the individuals can get those services. And so for me, those are the two biggest pieces, because I think how we perceive, disability is a whole nother piece, but the people that are directly connected to that perception are those that deliver our services. And so right now, a majority of physicians don't even believe that people with disabilities can be healthy. That's a problem. Like, of course, I mean, I'm 41, I've got a spinal cord injury, but I can be healthy, I can be well, I can be productive. And so that narrative and that message, even from the basic like thought, is it's something that, yeah, you can't change how people have this ingrained long-term perspective on a community overnight, but we've got to start that change because it impacts our healthcare on a level at which can be very detrimental.
It's really interesting because my wife and I have a son with Down syndrome. He's our sunshine boy, and he's doing great. But it was we my father-in-law and mother-in-law both actually were medical doctors. And after he was born, they showed us some very old textbooks they had in terms of, explaining Down syndrome. They were showing us like in a look how far we've come way, because these textbooks, I think they were from the 50s or 60s, and the advice was basically, if you have a child like this, basically put them in the nice institution you can find and move on with your life. So, I mean, and we're talking the 60s were a long time ago. We're not talking like the dark ages though either. I mean, you've got people around who, probably are still maybe at the tail end of their careers, but came up in that environment. So
Yeah. I mean, you say the 60s, but like that wasn't really that long ago, right? You know what I mean? So I think that, like, I mean, the ADA was not passed until in the 90s. So like that's a very telling conversation. And still to this day, we're still having conversations about not putting people directly into an institution or a nursing home, which for me, again, blows my mind, right? And so I love that you have that relatability and that you have, I mean, I don't love it in the sense that we all have to experience life in our different pieces. I don't love that we and your son have to go through these challenges and barriers. At the same time, it's very helpful when we're living in this life that there's a level of relatability of people that are sitting in positions of reporting on healthcare or being a physician that has an individual with a disability in their family. And so I really appreciate you sharing that, because it is a very interesting concept where sometimes I feel that we're repeating old history in very weird ways without a lot of us even knowing about it.
And we're in a good situation because, like, I mean, we obviously can advocate for our son. We're also surrounded by some really good healthcare providers in our area too, which is great. But we found a dentist who's got experience with working with kids with disabilities. So she's been great at, soothing my son a little bit, and he loves her now. So, but I mean, that's sort of like the great part. But then it's also when you hear about, or when you're running to doctors don't have that experience, like, this is a pretty fixable problem. I mean, this is not like, this is not like learning how to do open heart surgery. This should be fairly basic training that should be done at every level. And it just hits me as we talk so much. I'm very glad we're talking more about diversity, equity, inclusion, and healthcare. You know, the disability community doesn't always get included in that discussion, it seems. I mean,
I love that you just said that, because that's absolutely correct. I feel as though we are fighting to prove that we're a part of that DEI work, right? Because I think the DEI work has become in healthcare kind of this sexy thing, right? Where it's like everybody wants to make sure that they're being inclusive and diverse and all those pieces. And I often find disability is left out of that equation. And I'm often in these conversations saying, well, where's disability in the conversation? Because, and for me, it throws me off, because when I think about disability, it is not, we will all experience disability through aging, whether it's a temporary disability, whether we break our ankle, break our hip, like, and then there's long-term, right? Some of us are going to have catastrophic injuries. And so I look at disability and I'm like, wow, it intersects with all of us at some point in our lives, but yet we still have not figured out how to ensure it's a part of healthcare. And, you know, I look at other diverse or, you know, other populations, and there is no level of competition with those communities, because those communities, we all rise together. What I find is that healthcare is the one that's more dividing these communities, to say, well, you know, get in line. And it's like, no, we as communities, like we've got to stick together to say, you know, we're all in this place of minority. We're all in this place of disparity. And yet let's keep making sure that we're all floating, because I look at the lack of disability in the DEI work, and I get concerned, because there's this level at which we are spoken to, you know, confessions of the healthcare community behind closed doors. And like, if that was anything said about, you know, a racial population or an LGBTQ population, they would be sued. And so it's like, it's really interesting to see that boldness around disability being said outwardly, but yet no like lack of authority compliance to that mindset. And so I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it is absolutely something that is continuously left out of the conversation.
Do you think the COVID-19 pandemic has maybe helped a bit? Because one thing I was encouraged by in the pandemic, when the vaccination effort started rolling out, there were a lot of health systems that were talking about things, okay, community, we have to consider, are those with disabilities that aren't going to easily be able to get to a mass clinic, or, you know, are just going to need some extra assistance, or even setting up some space in the clinic for people with sensory issues that just can't be getting a shot surrounded by dozens of other people. So do you think the pandemic has maybe moved the needle a little bit in terms of thinking about those issues, or not enough?
Well, I mean, I think it did a little bit, but now you're probably seeing, like, you know, the FDA just came out with how they're going to now start pulling back on some of those components, because I believe May 1st, there's a lot of things where individuals with disabilities, they didn't have to, you know, annually have their Medicaid benefits reviewed so detailed because of that. And so oftentimes I think that the things that COVID was able to change overnight are often things that disability advocates have been trying to change over decades, right? And so it was beautiful to see that level of, you know, pliability or, you know, flexibility within our nation's healthcare as a moment of crisis. But now looking at how we're ensuring that we don't put back up those barriers. And I can see that with the telemedicine, where the FDA just came out with, like, how do we reintroduce telemedicine by learning what happened during COVID to not withdraw access to healthcare, but yet still have this level of compliance, especially when it comes around the opioid epidemic. And so it's just a complex conversation. And I love that it's being talked about, because I think that if it's not being talked about, then it's a problem, right? I just think that there's so many variables. And I do think that I'm seeing that COVID has taught us a lot. And I'm seeing that there's also a concern about what's going to go back into an old, what I call old paradigm of how we're going to approach healthcare for whatever reasons. Like I'm not much of a conspiracy individual, but I often wonder, like, when we go back to something that feels old, what is the motivating outcome, right? And those could be a lot of things that individuals in the general public are not going to really be aware of. And so that, you know, there's, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thought around access to healthcare and COVID. Yeah.
What advice would you give to leaders of hospitals, health systems, or medical practices, you know, in terms of improving care for individuals with disabilities?
My advice is to be proactive with it, and make it a part of your mission in a true and genuine way. Don't be doing it because you have to, based on compliance. Don't be doing it because it's, you know, a part of this like inclusivity kind of, like, do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because, like, people with disabilities and healthcare community should be serving this population without incentive requirement. Like, that's really what I want to say. Now, the reality around that is different, right? So that's why I would just encourage those that if they're not going to do it for the right reasons and be forced to do it, I think that then, you know, still be proactive and preventative with those pieces of, I don't think that people with disabilities, we have so much barriers. And so when we're out in the world trying to fight and convince hospitals and clinics and the healthcare community to be aware of something that they should, you know, after a while, I think that we as a community kind of get fed up, right? And so then we get a little bit more forceful in our motivation for change. And I would encourage those to be involved in the change rather than be resistant and pushing against the change.
How important is telemedicine going to be in terms of expanding care options? Because obviously the government approved some waivers that will at least extend telehealth programs through the end of 2024. So people are pushing for permanent reforms. Is this something that can be a game changer?
I think that for some, absolutely. I think that, you know, I tend to look at healthcare, rightfully so, from my own experience, but also from that from others. And when I look at that from, you know, others, when it comes to transportation barriers, but telemedicine is going to prevent that. I think there was a study that showed that while COVID created and broke down these barriers of access to care through telemedicine and other pieces, there was still a large portion of people with disabilities that actually died during COVID. And that, I think there was this very interesting, like, yes, we're going to make healthcare more accessible, but then there was this whole other level at which COVID created this lack of access where individuals that maybe aren't savvy within their own healthcare or not a self-advocate got lost and then therefore lost their own lives. And so I think that, and looking at healthcare in not just a physical manner, but a mental, physical, emotional manner, right? And so it's going to be interesting, right? It's going to be interesting to see how the numbers around all of this and kind of change. And I think within life, not just healthcare itself, we're constantly learning, right? And we're trying to make things better. And I just hope that as a country in healthcare, we take the time, but not so much to the point in which it's going to be detrimental to people with disabilities.
What tips would you offer families, guardians, loved ones, and those with individuals with disabilities to be better advocates and to get the services and care that they need?
I think it's giving people the permission to know that they can be a self-advocate for themselves is important. I think that knowing that they don't have to apologize for asking questions. I think that the latter part to it is that when you have a long-term disability, your families, oftentimes when you're running up against barrier after barrier, you can get really exhausted and you can give up. And I think that when you can recognize when you're exhausted, know that that's not the best time to fight, so that when you do have that level of motivation back, fight then. Because I think that when we're exhausted and we try to fight, it's more on us from a health perspective. It can be less of an impact on our own health, because we know that stress causes a lot of health problems. So I think that it's important to recognize that and know that also when you're in a moment of not exhaustion, when you're trying to advocate, your message can come across so much more effective and clear to individuals. Again, these are not all accurate in the sense that sometimes when we get to a point of a break, we can also be very impactful and get a message across there too. But I'm just saying what I've seen as most effective are those things, and just making sure that you know that being a self-advocate and healthcare is critical. And oftentimes when we follow our intuition, and we've seen family members ask questions, like, you know, we've saved some lives in those situations as well. And so those are my levels of advice, and being okay to let your family members, when you're in a place of exhaustion, advocate for you, like let go of that ability to be stubborn where, no, I've got the control over this. If you're someone that's not good at being a self-advocate, ask other people to support you. Ask for people to be a representative and advocate for you, because it's not a requirement that we all have to be good advocates in order to get appropriate healthcare.
That's such an important point to make, that, you know, if you can do it yourself, great. If you need to get others to help you, that's great too. And that's not surrendering independence. That's, you know, that's leveraging the resources available to you. So I think that's really some great perspective there too.
Yeah, it is, because I think that when you have an injury or you have a diagnosis, sometimes you can push against and be resistant to that ability for accepting support and resources. And sometimes when we do that, we can be missing out on a lot of access and resources and impact. And so I always encourage people to be okay with receiving support, because, I mean, I think of myself, like, here I am an advocate for others, and there are times where I need someone to advocate for me, and I'm going to be okay asking for that. And so I think that when we show even those that have a place of leadership, or at least a place of power, that when they can show that they need support too, that is an example of that. Yes, we can all surrender to that.
Well, this has been a great conversation. The time flew by very quickly, but thanks so much for taking some time. I think there's some great perspective for healthcare leaders, great perspective for individuals and families of those with disabilities, and some really good thoughts for people to be pondering. So thanks so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And seeing that this conversation around disability and healthcare was worth talking about and putting out there. So thank you for that too.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.